Hello, I'm Justin Oldham, and you're listening to an ATS member podcast supported by AboveTopSecret.com. For the benefit of those very precise computers over at the Department of Homeland Security, which may be scanning this file, I'd like to say that this digital recording was made on Saturday, July 7th of 2007. For the next 10 minutes, I'd like to talk to you about the difference between a political movement and a political party. Now, this isn't just semantics. There are some real nuts and bolts things here that you should know about. In general terms, a political movement can be said to be a large segment of society that thinks or believes a certain way within a broadly defined range of limitations. The notion is that certain definable goals and beliefs will move a segment of society to act in such a way that they'll make those things happen. Liberals and conservatives each believe certain things, and they will move in whichever directions are necessary to implement those ideas and turn them into policies. Now, political parties are dedicated organizations with built-in bureaucracies that seek to initiate those beliefs or goals into policy actions which become the law of the land. Being a liberal or conservative citizen is one thing. That's a designation of your national status and your point of view. Being a liberal or conservative party member demonstrates that you are employed by the organization which is going to do things that you believe in. Now, being a liberal or conservative politician means you are a lawmaker dedicated to making laws which are liberal or conservative, depending on your point of view. Based on my experience, there is no third party in the continental United States right now, or even in Alaska, that measures up to this profile, and I'll explain why. So please don't get cranky just yet. Now, it's altogether possible for small political parties to have local affiliation, but any alternative political party that's going to challenge the Democrats or the Republicans has to have national standing. When I say national standing, I'm talking about having local and state offices in every state, having a measurable presence in every state, and having the capability to get on the ballot in every state. The Libertarians, the Greens, the Constitutionalists, when it comes time for the election cycle to gear up and get going, especially in the last 6 months, they've usually got enough money saved up in their war chest that they can make a national splash. They can afford to throw out one or two TV commercials, and they can afford to splatter lots of junk email all over the place. But that is a short-term effort, which is based upon long-term savings of capital and tactical use of those things. Third-party candidates need to be more than just telegenic. They need to have more than a good message, clean hands, and a good heart. They need to have large-scale organizations behind them, peopled with individuals who can speak the party line without being prompted by the people from the top. Now, this is an infrastructure issue, and within the last few decades, we've seen different people go after this problem in different ways. Back in 1988, or whenever it was, he ran for office. H. Ross Perot wrote a check. He set up his own political party, and he ran it like a corporatocracy. He brought in his own people, he laid out his table of organization, and he ran his campaign operation like a company. In the unlikely event that he were to jump in, you could expect New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg to do much the same thing. In the modern world, that very well could be what it takes to establish a third party. Remember that the Republicans and the Democrats have been around for so long that their bureaucracies are steeped in traditions, and they have offices everywhere because they have enough money to support their staffing. I've always found it to be rather fascinating that the same sort of plotting and scheming you'd put into forming your own conspiracy would also serve you well in the formation of your own political party. The Democrats and the Republicans have national reach because they have people in all parts of the country. Any third-party candidate that you chose to run for office could have similar amounts of power if you could arrange for them to have representatives in every state. The field operatives for all major political parties perform a wide range of skills. They sneak, they peek, they influence people, they get the vote out, they write op-eds, they hold town meetings, they shill for the candidate. Now, until somebody on ATS can perfect that teleportation device, the candidate of your choice is only capable of being in one place at one time. That's why you need to have representatives all over the place to speak for you. Even if you are the next great thing, if you are the next great third-party candidate, you still need a large network of people to do all kinds of stuff for you. It's worth noting that the biggest and baddest of your favorite conspiracies often work the same way. They've got people everywhere. How do you think they get all that stuff done? Every conspiracy starts off small with just a handful of people. Slowly, over time, they recruit more and more believers, more and more people who see things the way they do and who are willing to carry out the core agenda. This is what political parties do, and they do it in every country on the planet. Before the Democrats and Republicans ever came to have a stranglehold on power here in the United States, each party began life as a couple of guys in the same room at the same time with the same idea. This holds true even for the political parties that you don't like. Once upon a time, the Taliban, which would eventually go on to dominate Afghanistan, was just a couple of guys in the same place at the same time who had the same idea, and gradually they recruited followers and they went on from there. Once upon a time, the Nazi Party was just a handful of guys hanging out in a beer hall, eating the free peanuts and drinking the beer. It's true that some political parties form extremely fast. In certain cases, the Greens, the various socialist parties after World War II that populate Europe today, they formed in a matter of just 3 years. The Nazi Party itself, back in the 1920s, they formed in just 8 years. The Taliban's rise to power was just 5 years. The 1917 Communist Revolution in Russia took just a matter of months. Now, you may have figured out by now that many of the examples I've just cited came about in very chaotic situations. As nutty as things are here in the United States right now, we're not fighting a civil war, we're not suffering through an economic depression. The speed that any political party would benefit from in terms of its formation does not exist from that chaos, not just yet anyway. As long as we remain stable and peaceful, it's a safe bet that any political party that wants to grow to national dominance will have to do it over the span of 30 years. Please keep all this in mind if you find yourself working from the inside to create and grow a third party. You're going to have to look at it long term. This doesn't mean you can't succeed. If your homespun political party can dominate local politics, generate good PR, and successfully run things with a reasonable degree of honesty, you're going to end up making a splash at the state level because the newspapers will cover you. If and when your party can make a credible showing in your state legislature, then people will start talking about you. Then they'll start whispering about national acceptance. Now, this may seem like a tall order, but there's a lot of very young people on ATS right now. And the way medical science is going, all those young whippersnappers are going to live a very long time. If you're serious and you really mean it, you might just live long enough to see that third party that you want so much. And if I'm fortunate enough to live so long, I'll be very happy to talk about that great and fantastic thing that you built. This has been an ATS member podcast.